Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Tom Krapweis is a multi-talent. Be it theater, radio plays, street music, or ensemble member of the comedy series RTL Samstagnacht, he has been there. With his brother Nico, he co-founded the production company Boomfilm and has since successfully delivered original formats for various media as a producer, director, and screenwriter. Together with author Norman Custer, he invented the popular TV character Vanda Sport. Along the way, Tommy became known as a best-selling author of various novels and an autobiography. He also won a number of awards for his work, as well as his commitment to democracy and enlightenment in Europe. We talked to Tommy via video call for this interview. Hi, Tommy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is a special episode because the series we'll be talking about is a genre mix and not a straight out horror series. There's mystery, there's crime, a bit of horror, and some comedy as well. Did I forget anything?
No. Everybody looks good. No, it's you didn't forget anything. That's about, you could sum it up like that.
All right. And I'm talking, of course, about Kohlraben Schwarz, which premiered on Paramount Plus in Germany on June 8th. And the project has a really interesting genesis. It was originally an Audible audio play, if I'm correct.
Right.
And it's a book series as well.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a TV series. So there's tons to talk about. Why don't you start telling us about how the original idea for this project came about? I mean, for the audio play, and then we can dive into everything.
My good friend and actor, Michael Kessler, recorded an audio play with us based on a children's book called Bill, Bo und seine Bande, which is quite famous in Germany, I guess, because there is a puppet play of the same name that was also on TV in the 70s. So it's nostalgic and funny and crazy. And we recorded that we did 16 episodes, and it was a lot of fun. And as you know, when you finish a project afterwards, you sit together and somebody says, we should do something again together, you know. And most of the time, nothing happens after that. But this time it did, because Michael said, you know, I never did something in the lines of mystery, fantasy, blah, blah, blah. And, I do, but he didn't. And so he said, don't you think that maybe there's anything that we might do together, because you're quite fit in the field and I'm not? And we started to talk, and the idea came up to do something with old fairy tales and old folk tales. And the idea came up not to place it in a police station, so that we have somebody from the outside always trying to get in and trying to get information, but he can't as easily. Yeah. And that was that, actually. But when I went home and I sat on my, well, not on my laptop, but in front of it, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I wrote about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 pages worth of whatever. Usually my way to sell something is not that I think what might the best iteration be, but who might want to buy it and what kind of company is that person in? And Barbara Landsteiner was a producer at the time at Audible Germany. Very, 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 very good producer. And I took the liberty of calling her up and said, I got this crazy idea together with Michael, psychologist who is on the outside of the police, and he has this and that problem and blah, blah, blah. She was super positive about it and said, write me two pages, not more, so that I can present it. This has to be made. I did.
That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it was a couple of days or a week or something later, because I was lucky. They had their jour fixe one day later. And I got word from Audible that they want to do it, and they want to do it big. and they want us to name whoever we think might be appropriate for the voice acting. Mm-hmm. We did. And then we talked about it very openly that it's going to be a genre mix.
Yeah.
And Audible took the wise decision to market it as that, which was absolutely super clever. Because if they'd have done it like, here is the new mystery, whatever, yeah, or here's the new fantasy, whatever, here's the new crime, it wouldn't have worked that well because, well, most of the people who were looking only for that would have been disappointed in a way. I mean, there's a lot of horror fans who are not so much into comedy or into character comedy, that is. And there's a lot of people who expect from Michael Kessler, because he's known as a comedian, that he is supposed to be funny only. But they went out and said, it's a super crazy genre mix. We got everything in it, but it still works big time. You got to hear it. Mm-hmm. And luckily for us and Audible, this was the biggest success they had in that year. We did second season. Mm-hmm. And with this in the back, it was only a matter of time because before book publisher would raise his finger and say, we need this as a book. We did it. It was successful as well. And with all that, my idea was to approach streaming services, TV stations and whatnot.
So you were proactive in that. It wasn't Paramount that approached you.
That was my plan. That was my plan. But yeah, people were quite alert about what works at Audible. And so we had a couple of people being interested in it. Mm-hmm. Also, other production companies. And we talked very openly about it and said, maybe we can do it together. You know, why not?
Yeah.
If there's a synergy and somebody, I don't know, has a good contact to, I don't know, Netflix, whatever, that I don't have, you never know. So you always talk. But quite soon, the inevitable happened, especially with the other production companies, two to be precise, but I won't name them, of course. In the beginning, it was wonderful. And yeah, we want exactly that. And we can sell it because it is this and that. And then you suddenly stuff starts to creep in. Like, if the buyers wouldn't like Michael Kessler, we would have to recast to make it younger or young adult, whatever. And then I said, no, this is not going to happen. Absolutely not. First of all, I invented it together with him. You wouldn't expect me to recast the guy who had the idea with me.
Yeah.
Secondly, part of the reason why it worked so well was the cast. I want, as much as possible, this cast, this ensemble.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, then we cannot have a deal.
It's really interesting because I've come across this quite a few times now as well. It seems to be like their one size fixes all solution. It's like, oh yeah, let's make it younger. I'm like, no.
Sometimes, maybe. You know, I don't want to say that there might be occasions where this is a great solution or a great idea, but not all the time.
Yeah.
And especially if you had a hit and Audible has a lot of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would get out as a streaming service and everybody would be like, oh, why didn't you? Blah, blah, why change you that? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a lot of people having big opinions. And in this case, the worst thing would happen because they were right. They would be right. Which is the worst thing that happens on the internet, if people on the internet are right. And I didn't want to change it.
Yeah.
We are all friends, and this had to happen almost exactly like the audio play. And luckily for me, Susanne Schildknecht, who is vice president of Paramount Europe, it's a very, very long title that she has, and she and her family listened to other audio plays of mine called Ghost Sitter.
Yeah. I know.
And
that
she's
one.
A crazy fan. So one day she might have looked up what else I got and she found Kohlraben Schwarz and was immediately hooked. And then it happened that we were in talks about something else with Paramount. And then Kohlraben Schwarz comes up and Susanne says, I want this. We said, well, if you want this, who am I? Okay, let's do it. And thankfully, they all were on the exact same page. They said, we want exactly this.
Yeah.
But with video, please.
Now, a little bit about the stories. How did you, and Michael, how did you guys choose the folk tales or the folk legends?
Mm.
How did you approach it? Did you choose those first and then sort of create the plot around it? Or
the other way around, or was it more of a combination of both?
It was a combination of both, because in the beginning, we were quite clear that we needed a folktale that is not very well known, mm-hmm. because we wanted this awakening of the old tales. We wanted it to be a slow burn. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, it's the so-called Kraxelmann that is only known and not too well known in Bavaria.
Yeah.
It's like a Krampus, a kind of creature that collects children in his backpack and takes them home in his hut by the swamp and eats them because they were bad kids. They didn't behave. And if they don't behave, well, you got to eat them. That's how we still live in Bavaria. No, we don't. And we found that very gruesome. And on the other hand, quite typical, actually, of these kind of...
Yeah.
Ich weiß nicht, wie man schwarze Pädagogik auf Englisch übersetzt.
Negative reinforcement.
negative reinforcement, right. And there's quite a lot of those creatures running around Bavaria. Some of them are quite famous here, some of them are not. So we started with him, and because the good thing, good in quotes, is that first he collects the kids, and you don't know, maybe did they run away, you know? Whatever happens, and are they in what kind of danger are they if it's the same person collecting them and whatever. So that was a very good starting point. And then we went a little more popular with the Bloody Thomas, who is also in Germany and in the world. He's not very known, but in Bavaria and in Austria and I think in the Czech Republic, he's quite known. And then we went bigger and bigger. And then we went to the Pied Piper of Hamelin, of course, who is very, 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 very well known. And in the second season, we went to Snow White just to, well, to give it this kind of, oh my God, it's getting bigger.
And to be inclusive, of course.
Well, actually, that was a very big thing, even in the audio plays where you don't put skin color into an audio play unless somebody actually says it. Obviously something you can do, but why would you? Because if you want to treat everyone equal, then there shouldn't be stuff like, oh, and so you're a black person of color then, you know? Why would you? But when we did the series, the fiction series, we quickly realized that our key ensemble is white as Snow White could ever be. And this is mm-hmm. actually something that I didn't want. Or let's say I wanted my original ensemble. But of course, we had to make the cast bigger anyway, because in an audio play, you always try to keep it down with the people in front of the microphones, because when you listen to it, you have to know who is who. So 4 or 5 people in a scene, that's like, okay, 6 is a little too much. But when you see them, it's not a problem. And in the storyline of season 3 of the audio play, which is not yet published, I had 2 persons of color joining the team. And I was not very happy that the typical thing for a writer, you realize you need 2 more people and you think, why didn't I think of this before and put them in it from the beginning? But, well, I didn't have the idea for this very special mechanic that they stand for. So luckily, when we did the fiction series of Paramount, I was able to put those 2 in the cast from the beginning, and that also put some... diversity in the cast. And speaking of that, Paramount was very happy that we had a diversity coach from the beginning in our team. They didn't have to tell us, because this was something that we are very fond of, actually. And also, I don't like to have somebody put in the team. I'd rather look for some person that fits. And this worked big time. This was really, really cool. And Victoria Linnea is her name, and she gave us ideas that we, being white, never ever would have thought of, because we don't have the experience. It was so rewarding. For example, when you stop me if you have a question, right? Because otherwise I just talk until the cows come home. There was one thing about the black person of color, Chris Oberreuter, who is quite insecure and always wants to be the overachieving person. And she said, you know, the great thing about that is many black persons of color in Germany actually have that kind of problem, because they always think, everybody's looking at me. I have to be better than everyone else.
There's actually a name for it in the US. It's called black tax.
Black tax?
Yeah, it means that as a black person, you have to put in extra effort just to keep up with your white or not black colleague.
Yeah, it was exactly that. And our actor, Alexander Prinz Ossay, when we talked about it with him, he said, you know, that's basically my life in a nutshell. Absolutely right. And it was so rewarding to see that, well, we wouldn't have thought of it that way. We asked Victoria. She told us. We fleshed out the character with this very special trait.
Yeah.
And it just made everything better.
Yeah. Circling back to sort of fleshing out the ensemble for the TV series, have you, just for my sort of, or for our listeners' understanding, have you done this sort of process before? Well, I know you've done with Mara, you've had the book and then you made the film. But have you done sort of this journey before from bringing audio play to the screen? Because I was wondering what the biggest sort of surprises, positive and maybe negative, were for you and your team.
I wouldn't call them surprises, because much of it was very obvious, because usually we shoot stuff, you know? And the audio plays, they came, it happened a little by accident, because in 2018, I was at Gamescom being the creative director of the Cosplay Village, and I met somebody who was, I guess, marketing director of Audible or Amazon Music. I don't remember exactly, Felix Patsche. And he said, we are looking for something family friendly as audio plays, because Amazon Music wants to start this. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I got those books, Ghost Sitter. And I think from the description that you give, this is exactly what you look for. Here's a book, read it. He read it, called me 2 days later and said, yes, this is exactly what we want. And that's how we got into the audio play gig. Mm-hmm. But usually that's not our first foray.
Yeah. When you sort of went and looked at Coram Schwarz, the audio play, and was there anything that you thought, okay, this is going to be tricky to put on screen, or that we have to change this completely?
Well, there's so many. I try to pick out the three main differences.
Yeah.
One is the scenes in audio plays tend to be much longer, because that's what you're here for. You're there in an audio play to listen to people talking. And then they kind of change the scenery every now and then. And then they talk again. And then you have the narrator narrating stuff. But when you do a series with pictures, moving pictures, you actually want them to change the scenery much more often. And you want the scenery to look like something that you have something to look at. Yeah. So, for example, in the audio play, Stefan Schwab and his friend Thomas Faltner, when they have to talk in private, they just, I don't know, they walk through a park or whatever. You have some birds chirping and footsteps on the gravel, and that's it. But we very early thought, we cannot do that. This is just super lame. And we came up with the idea that they visit a lost place, mini golf setting.
Oh, good God.
Because why wouldn't they? You know, they're absolutely super alone there. Nobody's there. And it had the extra bonus that they can always play for something, you know, like if I win, you have to answer something. If I win three times, you have to do something, you know, and this gave some extra energy. And it gave the audience something to look at while they are talking about, I don't know, in the worst kind, exposition.
Yeah.
You know, you always have to find some tricky ways to make exposition fun. And put some gags in there and make people really care about the answer and stuff like that. Plus, we could do it in an environment where you have fun just looking at it and play, seeing Stefan Schwab fail at mini golf, which was really fun. And by the way, one of the producers in Kohlraben Schwarz, Paramount, his name was Marco Massinger. And he was absolutely super fond of the idea of the mini golf setting. And this is why this place is called, and you can see it in the episodes, Marco's Mini Golf.
Sweet.
What's his name? Right there for everyone to see, with a K, as he spelled. This was one major thing. The scenes are shorter. They're still quite long for a series, but they were shorter, much shorter than in the audio play. More people are involved than in the audio play. And of course, there are some things in an audio play that you can do, like in animation, where you say everything's possible, you just need the right sound. But once you have to shoot it, you're really thinking second, third, and a fourth time, do we really, really, really need this? And one of those things was a collapsing school with our main character dangling by a thread.
Okay.
On top of it. And actually, we thought, no, this is something that we might do in season two.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I am sitting on the over the storylines to season two, and I put it in.
Nice.
So
nice.
Let's see what. And the third thing is that when you have a narrator
mm-hmm.
telling you what your character thinks, it's easy. But when you have to show what a person thinks without him or anyone saying it, well, you at least have to think about how you want to do it.
Yeah.
And since we are almost like a first-person shooter game, we are always together with Stefan Schwab. We never know more than he knows.
Mm-hmm.
So we always have to take dives into his head and see what he thinks might happen, what he depicts those old stories as they may have looked like, what he thinks the Pied Piper looks like and whatever. And this was the major, major, major difference to the audio play, of course. These are the three big things.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite from the folk tales? I know one shouldn't ask a writer if they have a favorite story.
I always do. I always do. Two things come to mind. The first mm-hmm. is I wrote the audio play together with Christian von Aster, who's a super crazy and super hyper talented author. And he had the idea to put the story in about a blacksmith
mm-hmm.
who makes a doorknob. With the help of the devil, of course.
Of course.
That can open doors where there are none, on walls and whatever, or in people, which is quite gruesome.
Ooh.
Yeah, and he put this in the stories of the first season of the audio play. We absolutely loved it. And we also put it in the series, mm-hmm. in the fiction series. And it was only afterwards when we were talking with a Kulturwissenschaftlerin.
Cultural expert, scientist.
Expert for cultural whatevers.
Yes.
And about something else, actually, and about fairy tales in general for the making of. And she said, you know what's funny? I didn't find anything about that fairy tale with the blacksmith and the doorknob. Then I asked Christian, I said,
where did you find that?
Where did you find it? And then he started, you know, there once was a young author in his 20s, about 30 years ago, it was himself. He mm-hmm. wrote this fairy tale for a fairy tale collection about new fairy tales. It was his own fairy tale. I said, okay, why not? It's so wonderful. We just keep it in. So that's why I'm really fond of it, because it's so perfect. It's absolutely, if you read it, you wouldn't feel that it's new, because it's like a perfect pastiche. You know, it's like if somebody did a Sherlock Holmes and it sounds like Arthur Conan Doyle. It was just perfect. It was absolutely perfect. So we kept it in, but being mm-hmm. very open about the fact that it's not old.
Yeah.
The second favorite is something that we only did in the fiction series and not in the audio play.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a female character called Perchta.
Yeah.
She has some similarities to Frau Holle insofar as she is not only doing bad things to bad people, but good things to good people.
Okay.
Which is super interesting.
Yeah.
And she is the only character in season one where you see how tormented a human being can be when it is pulled into these awakenings of these old folktale characters.
Mm-hmm.
She's inhabited by it, and she's totally lost because she wakes up on places where she never went to and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This was super interesting and great fun to do. So this is my second favorite.
Okay. Now I have a little bit of a Bavarian question. Let's put it like that. Why did you choose to put a priest in your main ensemble? Was that always sort of from the beginning? Because I'm not saying, it's good or bad, but I found it very interesting. I'm like, okay, so you have these archaic mm-hmm. legends. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have sort of the church as a counterpoint in a way.
Right. Absolutely. That is why.
All right.
You know, the thing is, from the beginning, we wanted different iterations of belief and disbelief
mm-hmm.
in our main characters.
Yeah.
Because we thought we need people to talk about what they believe, what they don't believe, what might be true, what could be true.
Mm-hmm.
And in the streaming series, it's even, we hated that quite a bit because Stefan Schwab, he's like in the middle. I mean, he's a psychologist. He's very scientific minded, of course. But he sees things with his own eyes that make him question what he previously thought was the truth.
Okay.
Physically possible. Then you have a priest, but not a Catholic priest, because Catholic, I mean, they are, well, not all of them are, but they tend to more, well, this has some quite archaic beliefs in it. And being a Protestant priest, at least it's not that super archaic and old-fashioned and whatever. But still, this person is a person that believes in a whatever being with supernatural powers, let's call it that way.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit more on the believer side. Then we have Schwab's ex-girlfriend, who is a super mega fantasy fan.
Yeah.
Then we have Anna Leitner, who believes nothing, ever. And that was interesting, because now we can have our characters talk about what the people, when they watch the series, feel. Like, ah, come on, this is bullshit. This is not going to happen. And then the next second you have Anna Leitner say, this is bullshit. This is not happening, you know? Yeah. And I found that very, very enlightening. And I found it, well, to be honest, I found it's quite clever, you know, that you give your audience, no matter how much they believe on the believe-o-meter, they have a person that speaks for them in our series.
Absolutely.
That was the reason.
Now, with the audio play, the books, and the TV series, would you say that each of these in their own universe stand alone? Do they feed into each other?
I would say that the book and the audio plays is a parallel universe, very close to the fiction series parallel universe, very close. And actually, we are going to address that in the near future, because we are going to attend a festival, the Elbenwald Festival in Chemnitz in August, with the whole original cast, including people from the ensemble of the audio play that were not in the fiction series, and vice versa. And we are going to do an audio play together where those two universes collide.
So you're doing a metaverse kind of...
We're doing a metaverse thing. And fans of my iterations and all the stuff that I write have a name for that. It's called the Maraverse.
Okay.
That's a word. I didn't invent it. I didn't do the homepage. They did, which is a great thing, because I can look stuff up. I can look up stuff that I'm not very sure of, which is super cool. And they really keep track of it.
Okay.
And so we are going to do an expanded universe, Maraverse audio play only for the people who attend the festival, which is going to really be really, really, really fun.
So it's
going
to be a one-time live only thing.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that we're going to film it and present it to people who weren't at the festival, but let's see how that turns out. Mainly, it is a one-off moment.
Okay, because for a second there, I thought you were going to say that they're going to start a podcast in the series. I'm like, ooh.
No.
Where is this going?
Oh, God, no. No, they're not. No. Yeah. It's going to be a real audio play, and we're going to address some things which we had to change. For example, Jürgen Tonkel is the priest in the audio play, but he is Thomas Faltner, police guy
in the
TV series. This was not because we didn't want him as the priest, but rather because he already had a big job engagement in a TV series called Die Chefin.
Yeah.
And he couldn't.
Yeah,
possibly.
Time-wise, it didn't. Yeah,
it didn't work. Out. So we need you. We want to keep the band together. You have to be there. And what we did was that I had the role of Thomas Faltner in the audio play, but the sole reason was, let's face it, I was there, and I was cheap.
Nice.
You know,
good combination.
Yeah, great combination. So if you're the director of an audio play, why don't you just put yourself in front of a microphone and you know,
don't charge yourself. Yeah,
no charges. Right. And so I did that, and I was secretly kind of glad not to reprise the role, because then I would have to learn lines and stuff, and I can't.
Okay.
And so we changed the role. We changed it in so far as now we have a real actor playing it, so we could put some more emotion into the character. And in the audio play that we're going into live, we are going to address that there are two universes with two Thomas Faltners in there, and one is in the wrong universe and needs to get back. And this is going to be super crazy. Also, Götz Otto, who some people might know from James Bond and other great shows where he was in, he was the narrator of the audio play.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had a role without any dialogue, but quite important, as the aforementioned blacksmith.
Okay.
So we asked Götz Otto, and he gladly said yes, to reprise his role as the narrator. But then he, as the narrator, actually says that he is quite pissed that he narrated the thing and had a lot of text. And in the, and as soon as there is a fiction series, oh, super, I'm the one who gets the role where he has nothing to say at all. And now, being the narrator again, I'm going to say a lot. This is so funny. Yeah, I'm really, really, really looking forward to that.
Nice. Fun fact, I was actually once in an extra in a scene with Götz Otto in L.A., but thankfully the scene got, I mean, not for him, but for me, the scene
got
cut. No, it's perfectly fine because I didn't know what I was going to wear before. And when I saw what I was...
When you saw yourself wearing what you wore?
Yes, I'm like, ooh, yeah, maybe I should have asked first.
Yeah, it's not always the right choice to wear a gorilla costume on set.
Well, I wish it would have been a gorilla costume. I mean, we did have an elephant and a llama in that scene.
It was that kind of movie.
It was Marlene, the Josef Hilsmeier.
Right.
Yeah, and he played Gary Cooper.
Why wouldn't he?
Of course. Yeah, that was fun. Now, I have one more question about the TV series, and then I have a few questions about you and your work. So I was wondering what the best reactions were to the audio play and to the TV series from the fans.
Well, I have never, ever produced anything, I can honestly say, that was so well received as the fiction series for Paramount now.
Aww.
It's utter joy. Every day, my social media is like packed with, wow, I've seen this, Tommy Krapweis, wow, it's great, it's great, blah, 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 blah. It's amazing. And the audio play also was very, very well received. There's, I mean, it's like every time. You remember the worst critics most, even though it's only a handful, you know? That's how it is with writers, I guess, or with creatives. But this has, I think the audio play has like 5.4 or 5.7 out of 5 stars, which is absolutely gorgeous for Audible.
No, that's and perfect.
But the fiction series, I only remember 2 findings on the internet by bigger media who didn't like it. There was one guy who said, well, this isn't really a horror series. I can only say yes. And the other was, if I want to see faces I know from German TV, then I don't have to order a streaming service, you know, something like that. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sure, but read the description of the series and then you know if you want to watch it or not.
Exactly. And I mean, if somebody doesn't have fun watching it, it's super fine because there's a lot of stuff that I can't watch or I don't enjoy or whatever. This is not a problem. As long as people say, I didn't like it, it's totally okay. The only thing that I really hate is if people say, this is shit, you know?
Yeah.
Because most of the time, it's not.
No.
It's only that you don't like it.
Exactly.
You know? And there's a lot of stuff that I don't like and I would never, ever, or at least I try always to differentiate between I don't like it or there is something objective wrong about it.
That doesn't, that I feel doesn't work.
Yeah, right. And so, I'm absolutely thrilled because for the first 3 weeks when the series came out, basically I couldn't use social media because it was, I never ever experienced something like that before. It was just packed with people being happy and asking for the second season.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Terrific. Now, a few questions about you. You've been in the media business for many, many years now.
Yes.
And you're multi-hyphenate, which can be difficult in Germany because people tend to want you to, well, not you, but people want, you know, they want you to stay in your lane. You haven't let that stop you. So looking at your experiences, I was wondering, has the media landscape in Germany changed over the last few years? With, you know, podcasts and audio plays taking a more prominent role, with streamers, you know, sort of injecting maybe a new creative / financial freedom.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many so many things. It's hard for me to pick out. On a personal note, I get bored easily. That's the main thing. I get bored easily. I do the same thing over and over again. This led to my different interests, being it stop motion movies when I was younger, or...
And you did that terrific series with your dad, or because I was at the event from the Akademie für Kindermedien. Yes, where you showed that.
That was fun.
I love that.
That was fun. Yeah, yeah. Where I showed Das Vorzelt zur Hölle. Yeah. Yeah, that nobody wanted, even though everybody said, this is great. I've never seen something so funny, but I won't buy it. That was crazy. And I mean, that was animation. That was something that was a kind of documentary and animation and comedy in the same time.
Yeah.
Something like that didn't exist, so we had to invent it while we went along. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, I want to be a musician. Then I thought, I want to be a comedian. Then I thought, I want to be a stuntman. Then I thought, I want to be this and that. And I always did that to an extent that I could live from the earnings.
Yeah.
So it's not like one day this, one day that, but I really, really, really got behind it until I reached one point where I actually could have done this quite a long time, forever. Mm-hmm. The hardest was being a musician, actually, because that was really hard to get to gigs and stuff. But being a comedian worked quite well in the German equivalent of Saturday Night Live. But while I was there, I was starting to get bored by saying other people's lines. And I started writing and I started directing and I started writing and directing for the other comedians without me in the scene. And I started shooting music videos for a very well-known person, media person, Stefan Raab, during that time. And then started a production company and we invented Bernd das Brot, a very famous children character. Well, then we did audio plays. Then we did music for whatever other TV series. It's always something new. And as I mentioned, I'm the creative director for the Cosplay Village because that's that's a live thing where we build sets for cosplay fans to photograph themselves in at Gamescom. You know, stuff like that. And we do the live shows and whatever. I wouldn't want it any other way. And luckily, stuff like the fiction series Kohlraben Schwarz, if you are a showrunner, you're not bored because you have to do everything all the time, which is exactly what I want. It's perfect.
Okay. What is your favorite, maybe German, but not necessarily, genre, film, or series, and why?
I'm absolutely thrilled if somebody does family entertainment right. This is, for me, I think, like what Pixar does, The Incredibles, I think is one of the best movies, script-wise, story-wise, whatever-wise, that I've ever seen, personal.
Yeah.
It's my personal opinion, of course. And I'm absolutely thrilled if people get this right. And in Germany, in the 70s and 80s in TV, we had a lot of stuff that was working for young and old, like The Muppet Show and stuff. The Muppet Show by Jim Henson was co-funded by the ZDF, the second Deutsche Fernsehkanal.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It wouldn't have happened if Josef Göhlen, who was a producer at this TV station at the time, wouldn't have put up with the money. And that is why sometimes The Muppet Show has German guest hosts that people in America and worldwide never, ever heard of. So there was quite a lot of stuff in the 70s and in the 80s that I really, really still to this day find super interesting. It didn't age that well, of course, in a lot of ways, but the intention to bring joy to everyone, whatever the age, is something that I really love. That's what I did with Mara and der Feuerbringer and with Ghost Sitter. And with Mara, I had a hard time because the distributor was not very fond of the project and chose not to tell anyone that we made a movie, which is always bad. But we did an audio play of that, and the books were super successful still to this day. And I'm in the process of writing book four.
Hey.
And the publisher of the audio play really, really wants us to do four, five, and six, but I have no time. So This is,
I wonder why.
Yeah, that's great. This is something that I really, really enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's the hardest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you tend to put too much stuff in that the kids don't really grasp in major yeah. spots that they should grasp.
Mm-hmm.
Or you, so you're being too clever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're being clever in spaces where all the grown-ups say, you're just putting that in because of yeah. me now. You know, it's super, super hard. And then you have to find places where the kids have something to laugh about. Then you need stuff where the grown-ups laugh, and it doesn't have to be necessarily the same. Then if the kids get older, they're laughing about other stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really tricky. And I just love every second of it.
And one final question.
Yes.
What are you currently working on? And you can list all of it.
Well, oh, my God.
That you can officially talk about.
Now, there are two things. I am in the process of writing storylines for the second season of Kohlraben Schwarz,
mm-hmm.
the fictional series, without having anybody saying, please do that now.
Yeah.
I'm doing it because I want to do it and I want to be prepared. And the signs are not that bad that is going to happen.
Well, fingers crossed.
And I just want to do it. I feel that this is the right time. I'm having fun doing it. I want to be prepared in case it comes. I hope it comes. I don't know if.
Yeah.
But that's the way things roll with my brain. If I'm stuck on something and I want to do it, then I try to find the time to do that. Mm-hmm. And I recently wrote two more Ghost Sitter scripts, audio plays.
Okay.
Then there is my fun place on Twitch.
Okay.
I am one of the people doing content for a channel called Wild Mics.
Yes, I read about that.
And this is, we're mostly doing, stuff that makes you aware of scientific stuff and of anti-Semitic things in the society and diversity and whatever. And I'm doing that to trying to change the world for the better with my 0.0000001% that I can change.
Well, yes, but every little thing counts.
Every little thing counts, right? And I have the great thing is that it's not unnoticed. Mm-hmm. We got three awards mm-hmm. For civil society
engagement
goodness.
Yeah.
Which is really great because, you know, normally you get it for something you worked on.
Yeah.
And it's well received. It made money or whatever. Yeah. Or people were happy with it, which is fine. And I'm happy to say that we got numerous awards for our shows. And this is great. And it's always amazing.
Yeah.
But it's something else if you get it for what you do to make society better.
Yeah. Well,
entirely different.
You guys put something out in the world to make, like you said, to make it better. And
yeah,
there is no expectation behind that.
Right. Except Selbstwirksamkeit, yeah. Which is a German word, I guess.
Look it up, people.
Sometimes you get the feeling that, you can't do anything anyway.
Yeah.
You're just lying in bed procrastinating and say, that's how it is. Climate change is going to happen whether I do this or I do not. And it's great if you find something to do and to actually get up and do something about it. And all the better if it gets recognized. And we reach about 30,000 people every Tuesday mm-hmm. in three forms. The live video mm-hmm. with chat, then it gets released on YouTube where it doesn't get too much attention, but in podcast form,
mm-hmm.
it gets about, I don't know, 20,000 listeners.
Yeah, that's good.
Which
good
is, numbers. It's just a great thing.
Yeah.
And today we are going to talk about Anthroposophie.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, Waldorfschule. This is something people you always have to look up. It's a very unscientific topic that's quite old. Even it has some Nazi shit in it. It's just horrific.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, good God.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah, talking about horror. This is
exactly. Talking about horror. Yeah. Back to the beginning.
Yeah, back to the beginning. So, yeah, we have in Kohlraben Schwarz, there is some horror involved. It's not a horror series per se, but I mean, there are some quite gruesome moments in there. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, and that was it. Thank you so much for
talking. That was it?
Yeah, that was it. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Dream.
Deaf Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.